Everybody, welcome to the Green Architects Lounge podcast, the number one iTunes rated podcast in the category of green building cocktails and song selection, as hosted by two main architects.
That's fantastic.
Thanks, yeah. Congratulations. Oh, and those hosts would be myself, Chris Briley.
And myself, Phil Kaplan.
There you go.
Hey, Chris, how you doing on this hot, sweaty,
humid, hot. It's summer, and... thank goodness we have drinks in our hands, and this is hard because I don't have air conditioning in my office. I got the window open so we could hear trucks go by. We had to turn the fan off, and everyone's
sweating. I can practically hear you perspire right now.
It's starting. It's beating up right now. Right now. So,
we have a special guest today.
Indeed.
Very excited to have with us today, Energy Circle's own Peter Trost. Peter's website, Energy Circle, known in many circles, not just around
well
here. In fact,
well done. Okay, go ahead.
Thanks. His tagline is "Your complete home energy resource: tested tools, smart advice," and that kind of says it all. His website is a wonderful wealth of information and knowledge, not just about energy tools and products, but also air sealing, insulation, and strategies that we talk about all the time as architects. And he is a king tweeter extraordinaire.
Nice.
Follow him and you'll get some wonderful stuff. His right hand is always moving on that thing.
Perfect. Hey, Peter, how are you?
Chris.
Yeah, welcome.
Phil, great to be here. Thanks very much for having me.
It's our pleasure because I'm speaking for myself. I need help with this particular topic. Or I should say we chose this topic because it's one we want to learn more about. Or Phil, you're doing. I'm kind of new to this. This is something I want to get into my project. So you know, My standpoint from this is just like half the listeners out there who are, I really want to get into it and do the home energy monitoring and use it as a management system and education tool for the client.
Well, I think that's important from the client. I mean, we talk about it from an architectural standpoint. You think, okay, we're just talking about pretty buildings and energy performance, but it's the whole package. The idea that these things come in after the fact and people say, all right, well, I want to know, how I screwed up, how much better I could have done if I thought about it before instead of after.
Yeah.
So we're trying to get people's attention to energy from day one, and the idea of integrating and having these conversations as architects instead of just building forensics guys or energy auditors, I think is very important. So
indeed,
it's our attempt to call attention to the designers on this.
I think you guys can only go so far, right? I mean, you can build a fantastic building that has got a great envelope and is very great from a thermal standpoint, but at some point you turn that building over to the owners, and it's that plug load piece, that day in and day out electricity use that you really don't have any control over, right? You can spec LED lighting, or you can spec a really efficient air conditioning system or great appliances, but it's out of your control at that point. Yeah. And so that becomes a really big opportunity, that whole plug load selection, which is in the hands of the homeowner. And part of what this whole monitoring thing is about is giving them the tools to understand what they're using and then behaviorally start to change how they use electricity on a day in and day out basis.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well said. Because it can be like a year before you meet see your clients again and say, hey, so how's the house going? How's it performing? How much oil did you burn, or how much whatever? Maybe over cocktails. We forgot.
Cocktails. That's right. So
yeah,
I want to have Peter talk about Energy Circle. Before that, let's talk about Chris's cocktail.
That's right. We have to do this, Peter. So we'll get to brass tacks in just a moment. But
it's hard to resist, though, isn't it?
It is. So here, cheers, fellas.
Cheers.
We cheers. Do this.
Okay. What we are drinking, what you guys are sipping, and I'm talking about is a I'm calling it a Pomini. Pomini.
There. Pomini.
Pomini.
Okay.
The layperson may call it a pomegranate martini, but since the martini is actually gin, vermouth, maybe a dash of orange bitters or whatever, mm-hmm. but most probably an olive, that's a martini. Mm-hmm. And the martini thing has gotten way out of hand. You know, there's apple martinis, there's blueberry martinis, there's blah, you know, whatever.
Yeah, everything
put,
teeny.
Put a teeny after it, and then all of a sudden, you know, whatever. It's just the poor martini, which is a delicious, delicious drink that we're not going to have feature here because, you know, you don't need us to look that up or anything like that. But anyway, so this I actually discovered, you'd think maybe it's a, you know, kind of a, because there's, you know, it's red and there's pomegranate, you know, that it's going to be more of a fruish kind of a drink, but not.
Yeah, and
so.
We'd expect that from you too.
Yeah,
kind of.
All right. I am the more. Never mind. Moving on.
Listen, why, it doesn't why need to be said, does it?
Said. If you listen to this podcast, you already know I lost at arm wrestling there. So yeah, no, I was over at this was turned. I was turned on to this by a former client who we were at their place, you know. And
what was her name?
No, it was him.
Oh,
was it him?
Okay.
See, okay.
That was
gotcha. All right. So, you know, I get there and the builder's already won in. He's like, oh, man, you got to try these. And if a builder is like, you've got to have one of these. And come on, that's a macho drink, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay. So this is a Pomini, and you can make it as strong as you want, which is also the thing. You can pace yourself all night by watering these down because the pomegranate juice is, you know, mass that or
this doesn't
can,
taste too watered down. It's,
no,
it's
this is no. You're having this the way I like it, which is here it comes. 3 ounces of pomegranate juice, 2 ounces of vodka. I like the Ciroc vodka because it's made from grapes as opposed to
potatoes.
Know. No, most of your vodka is not made from potatoes. Oh. And most of it's all grain, whatever. It's just distilled and filtered. It's filtered through charcoal to remove any and all flavor, but that's the essence of vodka. Grab your copy of Mr. Boston's, my friend, and he'll tell you about
that. You'll have the knowledge.
Right, but no, this is made from grapes. I think it makes a difference. And plus it's P. Diddy's.
Is it P. Diddy's favorite cocktail?
Yeah, kind of ruined it for
and
me.
And it's gluten-free.
It's gluten-free. Oh, man, that might be important.
It's low-calorie, isn't it?
Antioxidants in the pomegranate.
Yeah, but
this is good for you.
Yeah, this is good for you.
A couple gallons of this,
and you got vitamin C. And so where am I? 2 ounces of vodka, 1 ounce Cointreau, and about a quarter of a lemon wedge to fight off scurvy. Well, and then we're off.
What do you say, Peter? I think this is an excellent summer drink.
I think it's
fantastic.
For summer,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is great.
Not too sweet. The pomegranate juice is really good.
Yeah.
And it's got a great color.
It does.
It's all right. Perfect for a night of humidity and heat and no
just
air
like
no air conditioning.
All right, so back to the green architecture stuff. Thanks, geeks, for hanging in there while we talk about cocktails. So
Peter, tell us a little bit about Energy Circle, how it came to be, why here, why now.
Well, Energy Circle, why now, is that we need to address energy use in the residential sector. So that's really obviously our shtick, right? So it's buildings are just taking up way too much energy and contributing way too much to global warming, and it's a big task to take on 124 million U.S. homes, all of which are very ripe for energy reductions of various kinds. And so our approach was to try to arm the homeowner with good information, sort of take the complexities of what you guys know intimately about architecture and building science and building design, and try to boil that down into something that's digestible and understandable at the homeowner level, and really be that kind of translator, you know, sort of the take that information, boil it down to something that's really understandable, and push people towards the starting engagement point for taking on their energy use. And that might be an energy audit, but oftentimes it's really about what we're talking about tonight, which is starting to monitor in real time what your energy use is on a day in and day out basis. And we find that when people achieve that threshold, they start to sort of think about it, that there's a whole series of snowball effects happen that, you know, that may result in a real retrofit and a reduction. It may result in sort of, you know, from a financial standpoint, we you know, may sell some smart strips or some programmable thermostats or address their lighting issues, all of those things that are relatively easy to do once you get started.
Yeah, well, one of the things that impresses me about your site is that that's not all you do. You're not just there to sell stuff. Other people are interested. The New York Times found Energy Circle, Boing Boing found Energy Circle, and a bunch of other places. I mean, you've got, you know, the most important and kind of one of the hippest.
Right, yeah.
Right there.
I haven't been.
The rest of the stuff, I'm not that interested.
I haven't made it in the Times yet, so.
Not yet.
Maybe that's a life goal.
Yeah, he'll get there, Peter.
Well, where our notoriety in some ways started 2 Earth Days ago when we decided that a good thing to do for, you know, we're talking our talk the talk, right, is we monitor our electricity. What we decided to do was put our house, my family's house, online live on the Energy Circle website so that anybody anywhere could come see what our electricity use was in real time. And that we figured that was sort of the ultimate statement of saying, look, we're willing to go public with it. Mm-hmm. And frankly, you know, we had a little family meeting and said, listen, okay, you guys, you're ready to take this on because the world's looking in, and will we be able to perform? And so that's what got it started.
So do you find that it actually changed the way you and your family used your household electricity and energy in general?
Absolutely. So, I mean, the real numbers, which we just calculated in preparation for this, in those months since April of whatever that, 09, 08, two Aprils ago,
okay.
29% reduction in your household in electricity.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's because phenomenal. Just because you're watching it.
I think so. I mean, there's a lot to be discussed about why, right? What really happened. And I think that a couple points that I think are important to that is that we did not achieve 29% by rushing out and buying, you know, a whole house full of LED lights, and we're not huddled around the Bunsen burner. We're not sort of living in squalor. We are, I think, a pretty typical household. We're gadget lovers. I think that's why that was the lead in the New York Times story was, you know, here's a family of 4, 2 kids, you know, more iPods than you can, you know, you shake a stick out. Everybody's got their own computer. There's multiple computers. There's a home office. We are not a light user of electricity. Mm-hmm. And now, let me just pause for a second there. We're gadget lovers. And at the same time, we're not really, by typical national standards, an electricity intensive house. Mm-hmm. Right? So we don't have air conditioning.
Neither does Chris's office, as you.
Neither does Chris's office.
Sorry,
how about a mini split or something? Shouldn't that come on?
Maybe, but you know,
how about some ice in the drink, for God's sake?
just wait a week. Wait a week, and we'll be freezing.
Yeah, we are getting some building science condensation lessons going on in our classes here.
For you guys, the psychometric chart. Go through that in detail.
Nice. Check out the big brain on film.
Right. Yeah. But we heat with oil. We bake with electricity, but our cooktop is gas, is propane. So we're not a super electric intensive house, and so I think that makes the 29% reduction even that much more significant.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, when you're ready, we can talk about sort of, you know, why I think it happened to us. But,
well, I mean, you know, it's a good question. This is your business. You're focused on it. 29% is fantastic by any measure. But what about for the typical homeowner? Are there statistics? What would you get? What's that range?
So it's there's quite a the quick answer, I'm just back from building science summer camp and the...
Yeah, we're going to hear a little bit about that.
I'm going to have to ask you about stuff.
The sort of, you know, the high priests of energy use and statistical analysis were all present. And so...
And you get to talk about it. It's not like what happens at summer camp stays at summer camp.
Right? Yeah, some of what happens at summer camp stays at summer camp.
Dude, now I really want to go.
Yes.
More paminis for Peter afterwards.
Exactly.
Yeah, suffice it to say that it needs some progressive architects.
Nice.
Cheers to that.
Cheers to that.
Cheers to that. Wonderful crowd, but...
Yeah, here's to pretty buildings.
Yeah, but one of the guys there, Michael Blasnick from Boston, who's probably the foremost energy statistician, sort of data geek, and I got into a long conversation, and the truth is there are some studies about the impact of monitoring that have been done, but they're small, and in his words, they're all deeply flawed. And so the results of those studies say that the typical reduction when you start monitoring is between 5 and 15%. Now, he points out that some of these are really tiny. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the one that got written up in Home Energy Magazine was a sample size of 20. Another one is a little group of people on Cape Cod. And so we really, the bottom line is that we don't have a really great quantitative study to support this idea that the act of monitoring results in in reductions.
Right.
Now, we've got lots of anecdotal evidence, our story, and so forth, but and our customers, you know, speak very highly about it, and we see the results sort of constantly, but it's not, I don't think it's proven yet in a statistical way that we can all stand here and say absolutely when you monitor you'll achieve a reduction.
Mm-hmm. And so what if I were like your customer and I've what would I expect to monitor? What am I going to learn? What are the things that what's the information I'm going to get out of it?
Are we measuring here?
One of the key things to point out here, which is frankly something of a disappointment, is that we are, what we're talking about tonight really is about electricity, which, mm-hmm. and so particularly, you know, and depending on where you are in the country, we know electricity is one of the inputs, and there's a lot of work being done, and some of these devices we're going to talk about tonight will, I think, have promised to measure the other forms of energy that we're using, like gas and oil that are, you know, being used for heating or cooking or domestic hot water. But right now we're talking about electricity, and that's a limitation, right? So particularly in a place like this that we're oil heat is the sort of in some ways the name of the game, and we're not able to deal with that. So
do you think it's confusing or even maybe disingenuous that we talk about energy monitoring when it's really just electricity?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, we've trying to done our best in terms of the language on the, you know, Energy Circle website to talk about.
Well, it's not just you guys. I mean, yeah. It's kind of across the board.
It is.
That's what I find.
It is. And it's not to say that that's not possible, but what we try to focus on is those products that have a sort of a level of consumer acceptance, or that they're ubiquitous, that they're not too difficult to get up and running. I mean, part of the game here is simplification, making it easy. You guys, I'm sure, have seen these installations of hobo monitors and, mm-hmm. you know, jury-rigged things and data logging and all this stuff. And that's, you know, that's just out of, you can set that up, but that tends to be out of reach of most homeowners. And what we're really trying to do is offer up a variety of products that are really quite simple. You know, mm-hmm.
And the simplicity thing, let's talk about that. Let's lean into that a little bit.
Yep.
Because really this is all about human behavior. We have a lot of talks internally in our office, and many people have, about how much can you control for people? You know, can you really tell, you know, can you shut the windows automatically? Can you count on them firing up their wood stove when they need it? Mm-hmm. Well, not for other generations down the line. They don't know what what you know about the house. Things have to be sort of dummy-proof in a lot of ways. You're taking a risk if you're counting on people to act in a certain way.
Right.
We are unpredictable. We're humans. We err.
Right.
So isn't it true to say the success in many ways of this is the behavior of the human and the individual? I mean, there's personalities that are more suited to this. And, you know, how does one control that? And we'll talk about this in stage two, about the different devices, the interfaces. Yeah. I mean, how important is that?
Well, it's really everything, right? I think, but let's. I think for our audience, right, for the green architecture world, for people who are, for homeowners who are, you know, are taking the time to hire people like you guys to make a serious house from an energy standpoint, I think that's our audience, right? These are people who are predisposed to wanting to do something, and what's missing in that, you know, electric bill that shows up every month is enough information to be able to act. You know, one of the great lines is, you know, there's less information coming from a teenager arriving home at 12 o'clock at night than there is in your monthly electric bill. You get a, you know, this is how much I used this month, and I maybe got get 13 months of historical record, but the makeup of what happened during that month isn't there. And so the view of the sort of the those of us who believe very strongly in the real-time monitoring concept is your behavior will change if you have the information. So it's all, you know, classic management line: if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And I think that is absolutely true in the electricity thing. I think the number one reduction that we achieved when we started monitoring is the basic awareness that we left something on. So you've got this thing in your and you're sitting in the kitchen and it's reading 1400 watts and you have enough intelligence about what's going on in your house to say there's not we shouldn't be at 1400 watts right now.
Right.
Who left the TV on? Who left the whatever? So and that's that alone has really made I think a huge difference.
Well, excellent. All right, I say we take a break. And I think we've kind of covered, you know, the, what is monitoring, why do we do it, and how we measure it. And we'll come back and we'll get into, you know, some more, you know, logistics of actually implementing that.
Okay. Awesome.
That's it for this part of the episode. Be sure to tune in next week for more from the Green Architects Lounge podcast. A quick reminder that our theme music is Zelda's theme from Perez Prado, and that the views and drinking habits of the hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Green Building Advisor. Thanks for tuning in, everyone, and keep up the good work.